Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and definitely science. I thought tonight we would talk about a brief future of time. It's a little play on words, you know, Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time. And I thought it would be a little bit, we'll say, in that genre, only his explanation is really more historical, just as it would sound like. Mine is going to be somewhat a little bit in that order, but mostly about where we go from here, so to speak. And also defining time in ways that really, unless you've read some of my other works or heard some of my other shows, you probably don't know about. And then in addition to that, because we have these 2 hours, which I hope we don't get knocked off the air again for a minute or two. If that happens, don't hang up. But at any rate, I'm hoping that we can really cover this subject better than I have in the past, because usually this is such a, we'll say, encompassing area of physics and metaphysics that it becomes almost impossible to do it in like an hour. That's really very difficult. And then if you try to do it a second week, people forget the first week, so, or they didn't hear the first week, and then it's kind of like that's very difficult to do. So I want to start off with some very basic ideas that I'm going to just matter-of-factly say without trying to explain proof of them. Although if you want to read like Life's in Meaning, in there there's more proof per se, because it's more of a textbook situation. You can also, of course, call in if you had a question. Or you can write me after the show if you want, or how you know, whatever you would like to do. But the point is that I think that once I go through the whole show, the proof will be self-evident, as they say. In either case, let me tell you what time is, a sort of definition, because I always like to start with as good a definition as I can within a few minutes of time. And time is part of space. Now, this is a physics, not a metaphysics concept. Time is part of space, and it really has to do with the relationship between thought, and specifically God's thought, if we're talking about the universe, which is the first two parts of God's mind, and the third part of God's mind, which is at least starts out as intelligent activity and then becomes energy, as we understand energy. So you can say these three parts of God's mind have an interaction together, and the first two parts have a different relationship between the third part, when it's quote-unquote energy rather than all intelligent activity. It develops space, because now there's distance between the thought of one thing in the universe and something else. That distance is caused by a lack of perfect communication between them. So there's this distortion, this lag in communication, and the lag in communication causes time, which is part of space, to separate from space, giving us and all other things that have anything to do with energy or form, and the ability to sense the lack of perfection in intelligent communication between us and any other thoughtful being that exists in the universe. It's very interesting. By what I just described to you, now, a lot of you going, oh, what are you saying? I know, but you get to listen to the show as many times as you want. You can go back in a couple of days and re-listen to what I just said. But that's the foundation of definition of what time is. I know that that's like, whoa, if you've just heard that for the first time, you haven't read anything I've written, you haven't heard a prior show maybe on it, yeah, you go like, whoa, I would have to think about that for hours possibly to understand what he just said. But in reality, it isn't that hard to understand, so I'm going to give you an example. Okay, let's say that I'm sort of a reflection of God. We can even call me a being. We'll call me a monad, okay? And in my world, everything is perfectly communicated to all other monads around us. I'm Monad Niles, and there's Monad, who knows, lots of other names. And they all are able to communicate perfectly with me. So the interesting thing is there is no separation of us from each other in terms of our thought. And we choose to create some space for us to exist in by putting the intelligent communication that we could be having in some lower dimensions that we're going to help create of time and space away from ourselves, deliberately. Just the way God separated itself, we separate ourselves, not in thought, but at least in time and space we do. Now, the interesting thing is that since our thought is instantly communicated to all other beings, like us, you know, all the other monads, it doesn't take any time. It takes zero time to communicate with all other beings, even though it's an enormous dimension of time and space we're talking about. It's very complex number of dimensions, much more than what we're used to here. Everything happens just instantly. So it's kind of a timeless place, you might say. It's a fascinating place. But that isn't really what we want to do. We don't want to just hang out together. We do want to have our thoughts, we'll say, communicated to each other. That's wonderful. And it certainly beats being completely isolated. But it doesn't have the most important element to it, and that is growth. So we say, well, you know what? God's plan, and we already know what God's plan is to create more life. And we're sort of like life, but we're missing the part that can grow. So, and we don't want to do the part that can grow because we would like to not be so, we'll say, limiting by just the fact that we literally understand everything there is to understand. We would prefer to be individualizing through something we'll call form. And the form really comes from energy, and the energy comes when we take the intelligent activity that we don't have to use in our own dimension and immediately give it to a bunch of spirit in all the lower dimensions of time and space, and that energy becomes form that the spirit can inform and do what the heck it wants to do, but it's also going to start separating time from space because its intelligence, coordination, its ability to communicate perfectly is gone, and now time is going to start separating from space, and it's what we call wasting time. Time now starts ticking away because it's no longer instantaneous. Things aren't happening instantly. Things take time. The taking of time is really the separation of time from space. And for us monads, we love this because it gives all this life that we're helping to create under God's plan a chance to do its thing, which is to grow us and God, while we kind of stay hands-off. And God does the same. Because if we were to enter into the picture in the dimensions of time and space below our dimension of reality, it would do nothing more than just make the whole thing into a stupid puppet show. And there really wouldn't be any real growth. And we would love to have that real growth going on. That's what God's plan is about. So interesting. So fascinating. So the interest comes from the literal separation of time from space. So you have to waste time, it sounds strange, to grow God. You have to use up and separate one thing from another in time and space in order to grow God. This is part of the plan. Don't think of it as like, oh, that's a terrible thing, you know, because if the universe didn't function that way, there wouldn't be any growth for God and not for any of the secondary kind of reflections of God, us monads, you know. Now, I'm really not a monad, and I realize that I've got a long way to go before I might be. But the point is that I'm trying to show by example how you could have two different kinds of existence. One which is in perfection as far as the use of form or energy to the point where there is no form or energy. It's a formless kind of thing. And in that situation, there's not much interest. Where the things really become interesting is when you use the third part of God's mind to create energy and form and have spirit, which is God's thought, inform it in some way. There's always an informing part of spirit. It could be a soul, it could be a monad, whatever it is. And then you've got some interesting things going on. So it makes life meaningful. And without it, it wouldn't really be so. So as I discuss time with you, hopefully you realize that the separation of time from space is not really a terrible thing. It's something we struggle with. It causes a lot of hardship for those in the lowest realms of our universe, like where we are humans right now. But that's just the nature of the situation. It is not a bad thing, and it's not evil. Evil may use it to its own purposes, which is a different thing. But it isn't by nature that way. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about just plain old, I guess we'll call it plain old physics. It's called relativity, Einsteinian relativity. And also, some of it, we'll talk a little bit about quantum physics. I know that that part really confuses people, so I'll try to keep that pretty much on the down and low. We won't go too far with that issue. And mostly it's going to be talking about relativity. Now, you might say, well, Einsteinian relativity, isn't that hard to understand? It is a little bit, but, you know, I think a lot of people are getting it through watching science fiction things. Sometimes they watch stuff that deals with real physics. And more today, people are starting to understand a little bit about it. Or at least they've heard of it. That's a good place to start. Now, we are in the basement. We're in the place where this energy that starts from below, just below the monadic plane, where the monads are hanging out, down through the rest of the universe. There are five major dimensions of time and space that energy exists in. Five. Total of seven dimensions of the universe, but five where there's energy. And because there's energy, that means that the perfection of communication is gone. Intelligent communication, perfect is gone. So there's going to be some waste of time in anything does. And time now marches on, as they say. One of the things that is, we'll say, taught and pretty much accepted now in physics is that a lot of energy, if found in one particular location of time and space where it isn't equally distributed, produces a field called gravity. Okay. Now you might say, well, I thought it's matter that does it. Now, well, matter and energy are interchangeable. Matter is just a very dense form of energy. And so a lot of energy produces a field of gravity. And if you move into the densest of the five dimensions of time and space, where energy exists, you're pretty much where we are right now, the basement. And in the basement, there's an electromagnetic part, which is really much less dense. And then there's the non-electromagnetic part, where we are literally in physical form. And although the electromagnetic is always permeating and it's part of, we may not notice it. Like TV and radio waves, you don't notice them. They're around you. They go right through you sometimes, but you don't notice them. And so these forms of energy are so dense, we call matter. And what does matter do? Matter produces prodigious amounts of gravity. All right, gravity. And what does gravity do? Gravity distorts time and space. If time and space are nice and evenly distributed together, when you take something that has a lot of gravity to it, such as a big ball of matter, we can call it a planet or a star, maybe just a nice-sized asteroid. What it does is it puts a dimple in the time-space. The time-space is nice and smooth. It doesn't have any major distortions to it until you put one of these massive amounts of energy in it, and then that energy produces a field called gravity, and the gravity causes the time and space that is nice and smooth to become distorted. It kind of takes on the shape of the matter as an object that is contained within it. It kind of almost wraps around it. When you take space and you wrap it around something, the time that is contained in the space cannot occupy exactly the same location anymore and becomes separated to some degree from the space. Wow, you didn't know that. Well, that's the truth. That's what happens. So as soon as you take space and you put things in it, time starts separating from space, and when it becomes separated, beings like us and almost everything else that's alive can sense time. If you stopped separating time from space, like traveling near or at the speed of light would do that, you wouldn't be able to sense time at all. And it literally would take no time in your perspective, if you were traveling at such a fantastic speed, you wouldn't notice it at all. There would be no passage of time for a person in that situation because the time's not separating from the space because it isn't curving around any longer. You're exceeding the entire level of gravitation around you, although it's really not possible to do this for a form. You'd have to be out of form to do this, and there's a whole bunch of physics that supports that because the form keeps taking the energy that you're putting in it to go faster, it makes more form, so you can never get to the speed of light. But regardless, let's imagine you could, because that's what Einstein did. And interestingly, in his theory of special relativity, where he was examining time, what he discovered was an amazing thing. It doesn't take any time at all to go anywhere from the perspective of the person who's doing the traveling. And that's because at that instant, when a person reaches that point, or whatever they're in reaches that point, then no more time separates from space. So the amount of time that it takes to do something is based upon the amount of time that's separated from space, and gravitational fields produce this. It's very interesting. Fascinating idea. Okay. So where does that put us in terms of understanding how the universe works? Well, I'll tell you something else that's very, very strange. If you have a tremendously strong gravitational field, the field doesn't just cause time and space to somewhat curve around it. It causes it to completely curve around itself. And when it does that, then you have such a strong gravitational distortion that time and space do the same thing that they do when you're traveling at the speed of light. Literally, time slows and eventually stops. That's called time dilation. So huge amounts of gravity cause time dilation. Now, where do you find huge amounts of gravity? Well, if you take the total composite of our entire physical universe, the universe we think exists, and we don't know about the other dimensions, so we don't count them. If you take the total amount of energy in it, you would discover that, amazingly, it causes the entire universe to mostly curve around itself. It doesn't exactly create a circle, and there's a reason for that, but I'll get to that later. But as I wrote in Life's Hidden Meaning, it makes sort of an egg-shaped thing. Now, when I wrote that, they didn't have pictures from Hubble and other telescopes showing that that was true. It was proven way after I wrote it. Just want to give myself a few kudos here. Okay, so the important thing is that it does cause this curvature, and the curvature allows the complete field to have a major, we'll call it, effect on everything that is within the field, and it also affects other dimensions of time and space beyond the field. Let me explain what I'm trying to tell you. I'm saying that our universe, as we know it, collectively has a certain unit of gravity that causes a certain amount of time dilation between this dimension of time and space and the next one. It causes this dimension to have a different sense of time for anyone that's existing in it in comparison to those existing outside of this dimension of time and space. Does that kind of make sense to you? I hope it does. So if we look beyond just our physical universe and we go to the next major dimension of time and space, now our universe includes the electromagnetic or etheric part of it, but we go on to the next major dimension of time and space. That's called the astral dimension. Some people call it the emotional world or emotional dimension. And it's composed of seven subdimensions. So is our physical dimension, by the way. I didn't mention that. And the interesting thing about that is that the gravity that exists in our universe produces a huge amount of time dilation in comparison to the gravity in the next dimension. So what does that mean? Time is moving. For us, much, much, much slower because our universe curves around and touches itself. If it didn't, by the way, this would not be a true statement. And it causes the next dimension to have time that is literally running way ahead. There's a lot more. It's not moving so slow like we are. A lot more time moving ahead of where we are. There's a lot more time for someone to exist in, is another way of looking at it. So we all die. Everyone's going to die. And when we do, we go to live in the next dimension of time and space. But we can't take any of the energy from this dimension with us into the next dimension. So literally, if you have a lot of wealth or a lot of things, saying you can't take it with you, that's absolutely true. Because the energy in either dimension is stuck here by the gravity of our dimension. Some people into certain types of, we'll call it string theory, believe that it's stuck by a membrane that is the outside surface, possibly, of this dimension of time and space. Very few people have gotten that concept completely down right yet, but I'm explaining it in a more correct way. And that might be true, by the way, but that's not what they're saying at this point because they don't quite understand it. In either case, they're getting there slowly and poking along. And so this field around the entire dimension of the egg-shaped universe is, and it's three-dimensional. That's the best way to understand it. It's three-dimensional. So it looks flat on a picture, but it's really three-dimensional. So the energy, the gravitational energy that is being produced is enormous within our universe. And it's similar to being caught in or around a black hole. And I'll talk about those later in the show. And it slows down everything. I mean, that much gravity is creating a really, really big slowdown in the amount of, we'll say, time we have available. And it slows things down to the point where we're like moving at snail's pace compared to anyone who's living in the next dimension of time and space. They have much, much less gravity there. And they don't have any matter. They have a form of energy, but the energy is very, very thousands of times less dense than our form. And then there's another little quirk to their energy in that it exists in an extra added dimension. And while we have three dimensions, they really account for only one kind of dimension, and it's just called the physical. The three separate out when time is separated from space. But in the next dimension, there's an entire whole other dimension. So it's not just like there's a third more. There's actually twice as much more dimensionality. And that whole twice as much becomes a very big number when multiplied with the total amount of lack of gravity. So things really, really change in time. And what does this mean in terms of practical matters? Well, while we're doing something here, someone doing something in one of the lowest parts of the astral dimension, not the evil part, but we'll call it the seventh dimension, the lowest subdimension of it, besides where evil hangs out. Evil does its own kind of crazy stuff. They are experiencing six times as much time as we are, because our time is dilated, or their time is dilated, depending upon the relationship of who's watching whom, from each other, and the results are kind of strange. They, let's say in the 1 hour we live, we're living 1 hour right where we are. We say, oh, an hour has gone by. We check it out, and an hour has gone by. In the same amount of time that we lived here, the folks in the seventh subdimension of the astral dimension have lived 6 hours. Yeah. And to them, those 6 hours were just as real as our 1 hour was. They just lived 6 hours. That's called time dilation. And it works because of the tremendous amount of gravitational field in our dimension compared to theirs. And the interesting thing about it is that what controls this whole model is that the first two parts of God's mind, which is thought, has a very strong effect on gravity, unless the gravity is huge. And it is huge where we live. So we don't notice thought affecting gravity that much. But to go to the astral dimension, even the seventh subworld, the one that's considered to be the lowest, except where evil hangs out, and there, energy is following thought many, 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 many times greater. And so if you think something, you can create it with just your thought. You can literally fly from one place to another at great, great speeds and do much else with just your thoughts. Wow. And the thought they use there is, it isn't mental thought that causes the change there. It's just the creative imagination. It's picturing what they want in their thought causes the change. In the mental world, it is mental thought that causes change, but in the astral world, it's creative imagination that does it. And you can say, well, what happens if you use mental thought with it? That's fine, but it won't change the effect. The effect is only controlled by creative imagination. That is the controlling thought that works in the astral dimension. And lots of things have creative imagination with very little or no mental thought. And some people have mental thought, but have, for some reasons, we'll say, damage to their creative imagination, and they can't do much in the astral world because you need that kind of thought there. So here is a very interesting example that two people could be living literally in what we perceive if we were watching both at the same time. The same period of time from one or the other's perspective. That's why I said dilation is hard to understand when you're talking about something from different perspectives. But in either case, that one is getting a minimum of six times more life, we'll call it, to live in the same period that the other is having just one time. And if you go to the very top, to the very highest level of dimensionality, where the dimensions really are fully joined together in the astral world, it jumps from six times to about 24 times. So there's a four times greater jump. And so now, in 1 hour of our time here, someone is living 24 hours of time. That's a whole day. Okay, I guess, you know, it's easy to figure out. So 1 hour here equals 1 day there in what is called the first astral subworld. Holy. Talk about having a lot more time to live in. Those folks are living a way expanded life. Now, let's say, as an example, someone lives 70 years here. Well, in astral time, if someone were living 70 of our years, they would be living in the first subworld 70 times 24. Wow, that's a big number. That's a very big number, 1,680 years. That's a big, big number for what we're talking about in terms of life. So their life is much expanded. People live a much, we'll say, deeper life, if they choose to, because of all the time they've got. Wow, that's pretty cool. Another thing that changes is something called the quantum constant. And this is a little hard to understand. This is where the part of the show I said we won't cover too much of. You get into quantum physics. What is that? The constant. Well, it's literally a measure, if you wanted to technically understand it, of how much energy follows thought. That's what it really, I mean, if you get down to what it really is. Almost no physicists today think that way. But there were a number of decades ago, or close to a century ago, that did and understood it that way, and then it kind of got lost in all the mumbo-jumbo of mechanics and physics. But those who are more theoreticians and who are into quantum field theory understand it better, usually, than the mechanics people do. And energy follows thought greater than its own. And so the quantum constant is a measure of this. That's all it is. So obviously it must be a lot larger, a lot bigger, since energy follows thought a great deal more in the astral world than it does here. Here we have a minuscule, very, 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 very small constant. They usually use the letter H, smaller H, to describe this quantum constant here. But when we get to the astral world, because of the gravitational differences and all the things I described for you, it's a pretty big number, relatively speaking. And it gets bigger as you go up each subdimension. Theoretically, in our dimension of time and space, we live in the fifth subdimension. There's some differences. So even if you could get to the highest level of the electromagnetic part of this dimension and live there, you would notice a difference in time there compared to the physical, where we are right now, in the fifth subdimension compared to the first. But regardless, nonetheless, all that being aside, and some of that might be confusing, we have an amazing relationship with the astral world, if you think about it. Folks living in the astral world can sometimes observe some things going on in this world. And when they do, everything's moving like slow, really, really slow, depending upon where they are. Either 6 times slower all the way to 24 times slower. Well, that's pretty darn slow. You see somebody moving 6 times slower. They're barely moving, and 24 times slower, you got to watch for a while to make sure they are moving. You see, so that's a big difference. That's one of the major things. And, of course, it gives them some advantage. Because if you can observe someone 24 times slower, you can tell much more what's probably going to happen to them. So there's some wisdom that may come from observing things at a much slower pace. And that's good for them. Now, we don't observe them at all because they have too much complex dimensionality. Most of us can't see astrally, and not while we're physically here and conscious. And there are other issues as well, like even the light of the astral world doesn't truly penetrate into this dimension of time and space. So everything is difficult for us to perceive, although there is some ability to do so by some people. Okay. So the fascinating part about time is it's this flexible thing that changes based upon dimension and has a lot to do with gravity and is dilated around things that are very energetic and or massive. So time is nothing like what most people think of it as when they look at their watches and say, well, I've got 20 minutes to do this. So it's a lot different from our perspective. I find that intriguing, if nothing else. There are a lot of things to be concerned about what all this means. I'm going to go through some of the other dimensions and talk about some of the other time when we come back from break. But I want you to think about what this really totally gives us as a general picture of our universe. First of all, God is using time to help life to grow. Life is separated by time from other life while it exists in different dimensions of the universe. The time itself causes separation. And beyond that, it's also protecting. It's protecting us from what's going on in other dimensions of time and space, because time itself acts kind of as a barrier, we would say. Also, time, by being relative and dilated, means that we can live much greater amounts of life as we shed the denser parts of our form, of our bodies. As we shed those parts, which we call death, we live in realms that we live much richer and longer lives in. But again, without the sense of the lower dimensions available to us under most circumstances, and consequently, in isolation from the whole universe. You might say, well, why would that be a good thing? Well, it's a good thing for human beings, because we're kind of messy about how we use time and space and our thoughts. And so we don't have much control of the situation, and you wouldn't want us to be able to integrate this time and space until we've mastered the ability to use it in ways that are really beneficial for life. Otherwise, we'll interfere with the growth of life, which would be a very bad thing. Now, there are beings that do this, but they aren't human beings. They're superhumans. We call them masters in some cases. And they come and live in different parts of the system. They can be trusted not to interfere with the growth of life because they've developed enough consciousness so they can integrate their senses themselves in at least three dimensions of time and space together, and they can live in all three parts at the same time. Confusing thing to us for sure. Could you imagine that you can live in the mental world where time, I didn't mention this yet, I'll go into it later, is dilated by over 1,000 times, and then live in the astral world, time's dilated by 24 times, time and spaces, and then in the physical world, all at the same time. That's a difficult thing for us to even conceive of. I mean, you know, they talk about being able to live in all kinds of different scenarios at the same time. That's a big deal. And they can do that. Now, you have to have amazingly high levels of consciousness that exist outside of those three worlds at a higher level to be able to do that. Or you can't do it. But nonetheless, it's really interesting that it's all based upon the same model of how time is separated from space, causing all these different effects. It's fascinating. Just as I explain them right now, it just gives you a mind-boggling series of questions and new ways of thinking about things than we traditionally do. And you move away from the model that time is the same everywhere, and the model that time is like a clock and you can watch it go by and this and that. Because now time becomes this amazingly adaptable thing that's part of space and allows there to be creation. There would not be at least adequate creation for there to be new life that can grow like its creator if we didn't have this peculiar and very interesting model of time, which to our minds is confusing and difficult to follow. So this show, even in and of itself, is something you might have to listen to a few times to get the full message from, because it's meant to be a little bit on the confusing side. I know. Something more to get your head wrapped around. Well, listen, we're going to take a break for right now, give you a little cool off, because this is a lot to consider, I know. And we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about a brief future of time. And just the name should start beginning to give you some idea of where we're headed, maybe. A brief future. How does the future become brief of time? Okay, believe it or not, that title, will by the end of the show, will actually mean something to you. All right, maybe not yet. I know, but it's coming. Okay, so, fascinating stuff. Time and the way time splits from space, and all the things that gravity does is really part of God's plan. And the universe wouldn't work if it wasn't for it. If our physical universe wasn't enclosed, and like some 20 years ago, some physicists thought it wasn't, then the whole thing would fall apart. It wouldn't work. It has to be enclosed. And eventually, the universe that we experience, which is the physical part, will move from being an oval shape to a round shape. It'll only become round when all the elements inside of it are functioning at a, we'll say, homeostasis level, and there's no evil any longer, and there's a balance established between the amount of time that is being separated from space and the amount of creation with God that is taking place in the universe. The more creation with God, the more it moves from an oval, as it presently is, to a sphere. So that's the interesting part about that. Okay, so let's continue on here. So as I was talking about the astral dimension, it is a place where people live with a lot more time to do things in. But to our perspective, those folks are just, they're blurs. They're moving so fast and even the light from there doesn't actually reach our senses in a way that we can perceive. There's so many things going on that we really can't directly perceive it unless we have unusual kinds of sense, like some psychics have and other factors, or we have mastered these realms of time and space, and then we can live in what is known as a creational bubble that we produce of a quantum constant which exceeds or changes our reality in relationship to all other things that are taking, or most other things that are taking place in the three lower dimensions minimum of time and space, the mental dimension, the astral, and the physical, or etheric physical. And once that takes place, you could literally live everywhere at the same time, even though time is different in all these different subdimensions and dimensions. You could live in all of them at the same time. It's a little confusing, isn't it? So a member of the next kingdom, as an example, could be living 90 times, 100 times, more time than we have here, while they also are living here at the same time. They could be in both places at the same time and able to differentiate, able to maneuver, able to function with those great, great differences. It could be even 1,000 times compared to here. That is so hard for us to comprehend that all we can do is appreciate the level of higher level of consciousness these beings must exist in. Someone who is able to think from the Buddhic realm is able to think thousands, many thousands of times greater than here, and if they are functioning here, they are also able to convert all that into the time here for the edification of others and the benefit of others. So this is a tremendous thing to be able to do. It requires consciousness, not intelligence. Intelligence does grow as consciousness does to some extent, but they are really two different things. The consciousness part allows the mind to both join together and at the same time encompass much wider, different kinds of events in time and space. And it allows someone to live outside the dimension they are just in, so to speak. They can actually exist simultaneously in disparate dimensions of time and space. Hard to understand, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Okay, so let's talk about things like black holes. What the heck is a black hole, anyway? A black hole is a part of our dimension, but it also has something to do with some of the other dimensions of time and space, where gravity has caused time and space to completely circle in on itself. And unlike just the membrane of our universe, which is doing that in an egg shape, it tends to do it in more of a true sphere. And when it does this, it does it in a relatively small area, like maybe just a mile or two. And it does so from the enormous gravitation of an entire spent out in, we'll say, nuclear energy star that still has tremendous mass to it and has absorbed a lot more mass. As it starts to absorb even more mass, it completes this vortex that moves outside of this dimension in time and space into some of the higher dimensions of time and space. And if you get near a black hole, your time and space starts to change, literally slows down because of the very, very high gravitational energy. If you get too near it, you will become literally infinitely small string of spaghetti, crunched into like smaller sizes than even atoms, and you'll be physically destroyed. I mean, and all the physical energy will be destroyed and converted into higher forms of energy. Now, the next higher form of energy would be astral energy. So a black hole in our dimension of time and space connects to at least, at a minimum, the astral dimension. And it takes some of the physical energy out of this time and space and feeds it into, in a larger quantity, actually, astral energy. And so it's sort of like taking energy out and putting it there. And you might say, well, what the heck is that about? Wouldn't we start losing a lot of energy and it'd be bad news for us? Yes and no, because there's energy, in effect, being created through something that's very hard to understand called a Higgs lens creation effect. That's what it's called. It isn't true, but it's as close as we can get in modern physics. And what's really taking place is the mind of God, as it is creating in this dimension more through all the lower life, is bringing in energy into this dimension. So, yes, the Big Bang produced initially a great deal of the energy that we're familiar with. But energy is following thought from other dimensions of time and space, that as a thought becomes like God's, and that's producing a new type of energy that is replacing some of the older spent energy that was in this dimension. That older spent energy goes to the higher realms to become part of those realms. But it comes out as light. It's taken in as darker forms of energy in this dimension, and then it's reshuffled into lighter forms of energy. So we have sort of like a recycling system. That's basically the best way to understand it. And some black holes go all the way to the very highest levels where energy can be in existence, which is called the atmic dimension. It's the third or spiritual dimension of our universe. And those black holes are the bigger ones. All galaxies have a black hole. Eventually, all galaxies have a black hole that goes into the spiritual dimension, or atmic. Some people call it nirvanic. That's another name for it. And when it gets there, it now is reestablished as this highest and least dense form of energy. And it goes back into the system, and eventually we'll come back down to our dimension. And energy may go through like 100 cycles or so of this type of movement back and forth between the dimensions. It's a fascinating system. We'll call it the universal recycling system. And the reason that the energy needs to be recycled over and over again is that at different levels of intelligent activity in each dimension, in different amounts of time dilation, the energy experiences new realities. As consciousness grows in the universe, it affects the energy in different ways, improving ways, actually, drives out the potential for evil, and over time brings the level of intelligent communication between one energy and another to a much higher factor. That allows much better senses in the forms of all beings that exist in the spiritual dimension and below. So there's a real good reason for this kind of upgrading of energy on a regular basis. And black holes play a most important part in this. There could be literally no increased level of sense beyond a certain point in the bodies of all living things if you didn't have this recycling going on. You would reach a kind of maximum level with very, very slow development after that, and consciousness would be tremendously slowed down because its bodies, the senses that it's using, would not keep up. But the recycling process keeps it up because the energy comes out as light on the other side. It is ready to become more able to work at all the different densities that it has in prior existence experienced. So you could call it the life of energy, I guess, is one way to look at it, and the life of the third part of God's mind. All right. So this is the need for black holes. Galaxies produce some of the best examples of this, but there are smaller black holes that present different kinds of examples. They may produce most of their energy, in the lower dimensions rather than the spiritual. Galaxies almost pump most of their energy right to the spiritual, whereas smaller black holes tend to produce higher amounts maybe in the mental or astral dimensions in comparison to the spiritual. A little bit might get to the spiritual, but most of it may get pumped out into the lower dimensions. So you have this very complex pattern of recycling going on, which is good. It makes the universe work the way it's supposed to. It's just the way things are supposed to work out. Now you could say, well, when does it come? What causes energy then to come back down through this thing called Higgs-Lensing effects or whatever? What causes that stuff to happen? Well, it's almost like saying there's a vacuum being created. When you're taking energy out of the physical part of the universe, it draws in energy. And the way it does this is that energy is being we'll call coming from nothing, instantly created. This energy that we call energy is really the closest thing we can understand to God's thought in reality. And what the bottom line is that the creative thought is the process. There's a like a vacuum effect, but you can't have the energy brought in without there being the attraction of higher and higher thought, just like God's. It's something like the following. Imagine this. Let's say you take a giant vacuum bottle that you can see through so you can watch what's going on. And you evacuate it. Now there's a tremendous amount of potential force to bring in something into that vacuum bottle. But the vacuum bottle has a big mouth on it, and the mouth is controlled by the thought of God, which is the living beings, the living life forms, as they have developed and are developing themselves by co-creating with God. As these living beings collectively think in creative ways to create virtue inside the bottle, the neck of the bottle opens up, and now in comes a bunch of air, we'll call it energy, and now the balance is established. If you don't open the neck through the thought of God, you can have very, very strong vacuums, but the bottle will remain intact until, of course, it crushes itself, which we wouldn't want to have happen. And then the system would fail anyway if it crushed itself. So if you look at it from this standpoint, then it isn't just the loss of energy that's causing it. It's not a natural process. You've got to have the thought of God increasing in the universe. And so when we talk about a dark energy source, dark because we can't see it, the reason we can't see it is our own thought. And we aren't creatures that normally can see thought very easily. So consequently, we're fooled by this. And we think it may have something to do with the pressure from some negative gravity force, but when you compute that out, it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is that isn't the real cause, just like in the vacuum bottle. It isn't the vacuum that causes the air to rush in. It's opening the mouth. You have enormous vacuum, and it still won't work. And you can't open the mouth unless you can unscrew the lid or whatever you're going to do, or open the iris or however you're going to have it work, by the thought of God. That's how it works. I hope you understand this. Physicists are struggling with this very concept as we speak. And how much they're really going to discover about it in the next decade or two is going to be an interesting idea. I know some people that I teach or that listen to me think the other. They think it's all just some form of energy. And they don't believe in the thought of God as being the controlling factor. Well, good luck. Because that ain't going to work. And you'll see in the future. But anyway, so time then. Let's talk about time now. We'll get back to the brief future of time. What happens to time when you open the jar that it has the vacuum in? Well, this is a very interesting effect because every time more and more energy is coming in that causes more air to come into the jar, you're changing the relationship of the quantum constant to some degree. And it gives you more time to do things, and similar to like you're living in the astral world. And literally, things are becoming more electromagnetic and joined with the electromagnetic parts of physics simultaneously. You start joining what are known as the four forces in nature. It's gravity, the weak force, the strong force, and the electromagnetic. When you start joining these forces together by opening up the jar, by increasing the consciousness, the quantum constant grows, and when it does, we get more time in which to do things. Now, do we notice this right now? No, because it's extremely small and slow at the level where we are at. But at some point, it will change. And so what's going to eventually happen? Let's take it to its max. What's going to happen in the physical and etheric or electromagnetic parts of it? When those two join back together, they're going to join back together, and all the forces are going to join back together, the time here will start becoming more and more like astral time. It'll grow to eventually the lowest part of the astral world, which, by the way, will also be growing because the beings over there are going to be creating more. And so eventually these two dimensions of time and space will merge, and they will become one. And that's how it's supposed to be. And when that takes place, then you get a real interesting effect, because that means that all of the intelligent activities that could have, would have, ever did take place in the physical world happened. That's it. And we're done. And we move on to all of, eventually, to do all the astral ones, using the perfection of the etheric physical ones. That produces a whole new level of God that is perfect on these two dimensions of time and space. And time becomes completely rejoined with space at that point, and there's no more creation that's necessary or can be done in those two realms. And it keeps moving up this way indefinitely, we might say, but eventually it reaches the monadic level where there's no more energy. Now the beings are only concerned about creating in a formless existence the existence of God without form, but with form fused, we'll call it, with thought. So at that point, you can say that everything below the second dimension of time and space, from the spiritual plane down, has now become perfected. And this is how time eventually is going to become a single thing joined with space with no separation. Also, creation, though, stops in those lower dimensions. And this is a good thing. You might say, well, that's a terrible thing. There won't be any more creation there. No, it's the completion of all life. All life has reached the level of being this super being of a monad. And it's contained within this life that is growing God as a super being. And there's other beings outside this universe that are actually participating in a bit of this. I don't want to confuse you. So just we can think of these beings, these monads, as actually having other beings working within the consciousness of the monad. And it's hard to understand, I know. And so God is growing, and even God accepts and invites other great beings and other universes to even participate in its growth. It's just an amazing thing. And the fantastic part about this is that time is doing two things at the same time, okay? It's causing creation by its separation, and it's causing the reintegration of God as a single being in and of itself, while all the other parts of it are equaling eventually what God what God is as a being. So it's sort of, each is within its own time perspective, becoming God for the time that it exists within the system. It may leave the universe, and when it does leave the universe, it leaves the universe as God has been and is up to that point, but it can't go beyond that except in a future virtual sense. Virtual being, it can create all the logical outcomes, but it can't experience what God is experiencing, because God is experiencing this from infinite numbers, or almost infinite numbers, of life forms. So it's a fascinating experience that is going on. And God is providing the resources of time and space and energy and thought for life to become gods themselves. Not to become God itself, as it will forever be, or as it will be at the end of the process, but at least God as it was at the time that it left the universe, so it can experience that part of God. And the amazing thing about this, is that two things are happening that I've been talking about in the last few months. Each of these great beings that is going through this process is becoming individual more and more, while it is also becoming one with all and growing God in the process, and one with God, at least until it leaves the universe. So it is amazingly experiencing time in a growing sense. Remember, as you move up this spectrum, you experience vast amounts of more time until at the very top of the universe, called the, we'll call it the ultimate plane of God's existence. Yeah, okay, if you want to call it that. There's lots of other names, but right now we'll just say this ultimate place where God exists. In that particular plane of oneness, that super plane of greatness, of allness, at that particular place, it is experiencing all time, in both real time and virtual time, till the end of time as it projects it from its experiences up to that time. And this is happening because time is being dilated. A huge amount of more time exists at the higher realms than at the lower realms. So much greater that it's beyond our understanding, because it's the time of the entire universe and its development. We're going to be talking about a trillion years here. So, beings at the very top of this dimensionality, where all these dimensions are joining together, may be living out their life for a trillion years, while we're poking around here for one lifetime. That's hard for us to understand, but that is what time is like. Time is different depending upon your level of creation and the number of dimensions you can live in simultaneously, and the amount of beings that you can perfectly have intelligent communication with and sense with all at the same time. Now, the sense part comes into the five lower dimensions. You don't really need senses above that. But these beings are also sensing all of the senses, through all the senses that form has. And then they're sensing through the mind senses. They're actually a mind senses. Hard to understand those mind senses of their creator at the same time. That amount of sense gives them the experience of all other beings simultaneously with their experiences. And that brings them closer and closer to being God. Remember, they can never exactly replicate God, because God is having this happen from all other beings at the same time. And these beings have a limited capacity. They joined in at a certain point, and they usually end before the real end of the universe. So they go to a virtual one, and they get some logical outcomes, but they don't go through the same process that the God of the universe does. And they wouldn't want to. They are going to go to another universe with other kind of God to experience that other kind of existence, and to stay here just to live through God's single existence would be robbing them of additional experience. God's already gone through that experience. That's what made God a real God. Okay. They're in God's in training. They're going to go through trillions and trillions of what we call our years to get there. But the important thing about this is that time continually expands in the ability for a person to have experience and thought. And it actually, if you take it to its logical conclusion, never ends. And you might say, well, wait a second. Why wouldn't it end? You said this universe eventually ends. Why does not time end? And the reason for that is that we're in the lowest universe you can have. There are seven kinds. And I don't know how many there are of this seventh kind of universe. But regardless, at the very top of the highest kind of universe, and we're in the lowest, so this is going to stretch your mind beyond all factors, time goes on endlessly. Because those are gods creating in the most advanced universes, endlessly creating a more and more complex kind of most advanced universe, way beyond the kind of universe we exist in. And there's no end to it. It doesn't end. So what we really are saying is that life, as getting into the life of gods, I guess, never ends. Does it have a beginning? Sure. We are self-created beings. Even that's an extension of God. God is self-created. But it has no end. Now, you can then say, well, how could something have a beginning and no end? And the answer is that you have to start with something being self-created, and you have to recognize that once something exists, it can choose, and in most cases does, we're not saying everything does this, to exist forever. There's no reason that it wouldn't. Because its existence becomes infinitely more interesting, and there's no end to it. And it does, becomes more interesting because it keeps creating more and more life, it keeps the process going endlessly. It's really fascinating. I love this. So time becomes infinite. But not within just our universe. Within all existence, time is endless. You could say eventually the universe may end, and probably will. Because this particular universe is just the bottom of the process. But there are other universes similar to this one. So they're going to go on. No, they're not parallel universes. That's a different thing. And that's a kind of a goofy thing. There are certain problems with its existence at all. I won't go into that tonight. But time goes on at a larger and larger dimensionality, more and more joined with space, but joined in these very complex interdimensional ways that allows a being to experience trillions of what we would consider our years of time before it even leaves our universe. Even though we're stuck down here and just going through what we call years. Okay, let me give you a little break. I know that's a lot to think about. That's a huge amount to think about. I'm just going to tell you a few things that I want to tell you about some of the stuff we're still working on. And we are getting close. Now, we're not quite there yet. Yes, there's a few people trying the experimental matches of the stuff we're making. And people are taking stuff away from me as I'm doing this. I don't know why they're doing that. But let me tell you about Phi Chi Jizuk, which I don't even have a sheet of here, but I'll tell you about it. Phi Chi Jizuk, and the Chi is spelled QI, just as it is in Chinese, QI. Phi Chi Jizuk. I've been using it, by the way. I kind of hurt my back in a real, kind of a physical kind of injury thing. It was a few weeks ago. And I've been taking it. And I find it really helpful. I mean, just amazingly so. I've tried other stuff. Other stuff may modify the pain to some extent. But then it comes back. It's a weird stuff. and sometimes worse if I wasn't careful about what I was doing. Whereas the 5-Chi Chizik gets rid of this, in my case, got rid of the swelling, allowed some of the healing to take place in my discs and things that might have been kind of slammed around a little bit, and got rid of pain at the same time, and made it much, much easier for my recovery. Yeah, this stuff is great. It isn't just a pain reliever, although that's all we can really say about it. In my opinion, it really solves the energy problems that are going around in the nervous system that are being blocked in the meridians and affecting all the senses in the body. And it really is just it's exactly what you want to have if you're going to try to get something to really treat a problem. A problem that has pain associated with it. And that's what this stuff is for. And the product, once it is made into tablets, we were not using tablets right now, but once it's made into tablets, you can take 4, 5, 6 or more of the tablets at one time, but they last 8 to 12 hours. A lot of people might only take it twice a day, say every 12 hours. Some people might take it one huge dose, up to 10. That's a max. It's one time only. And not take it again for the rest of the day because it just went, just whatever they got, a headache or whatever it is, they have come on suddenly, very bad one, might knock it out and that's it. Done, you know. Or you can take like a half a dozen if you have a really bad case, maybe of arthritis or something like that. And over a short, relatively short period of time, the pain will not only go away while the stuff's active in your system, which could be anywhere from 6 to 12 hours, but it will come back less nasty. So each time you use it, it gets better. That's been my experience. Now, your experience, well, you'll have to give it a shot and see. We should have some available, I'm guessing now. Maybe by mid-December. Maybe. Maybe a week or two before that. We'll see. We're waiting. It's on its way. It's coming and everything else. I don't want to give you any more. It's just going to be here in a week or two. Because even after we get it, it has to be quarantined, and then we've got to have it made, and then we have to have it packaged. At the very earliest, maybe the beginning of December. Maybe that would be our... But there's a holiday, there's a Thanksgiving in there and everything. So we'll see. And right now, it's looking like, because of our costs, everything's going up. I don't know if you know this. But unfortunately, things in the food part of the world are definitely going to be affected first, and that herbs are considered like food, so they fall into the same general category. It's looking like the small bottles will be like about $20. The large bottles will probably be $50. You might say, well, that's a lot for an analgesic. Yeah, but it's way more than an analgesic. It does a lot more, and you just have to try it out, you know. And if you don't like it, you get your money back. So, I mean, it isn't like, oh, well, I'm going to get ripped off. No, you can try it. And if you say, hey, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, it didn't work for me, get your money back. Can't beat that. And if it works, you've got something that you really can use. And you don't have to take it every 4 hours. And it's way more effective than the stuff that you can take over-the-counter stuff. In most circumstances, for most kinds of things, it's way more effective, in my opinion. And you'll get long-term, much better results. That other stuff, at best, gets rid of some of the pain or discomfort, but it usually comes right back as soon as it wears off. This you'll find to be definitely an improvement, I think, in that. If you haven't tried Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol, try it. I'm still on it. I'm using it. It really works. I'm getting younger. I know you haven't seen me lately, but I'm getting younger. And also, we have it available for dogs and cats. And you can get that from foreveryoungproducts.com. And it's 800-777-7850. And the same is true if you want to get some Soul Balance. and that's the same number. Now, cell balance really builds up your immunity system and helps you deal with illnesses. So you want, if you have that problem, or if you have bad allergies, you can take the small amounts of it. Sometimes it really helps that. Same number, 800-777-7850. And that's really sold by Life Balance Association. Okay, so let me go on, because I don't want to lose the momentum here. And let's talk about time from the standpoint of it being a future event in comparison to a historical event. Okay. While we right now are listening, you're listening, I'm speaking, while this is going on in this dimension of time and space, our souls in the higher monastic world, in the second sub-world of the higher monastic world, are going through scenarios with time dilated by maybe 600-700 times from here, giving us this relationship of 700 times more time for it to do this than what we're doing. And what are they doing? Well, collectively, hundreds of them, maybe even 1,000, are working together to go through scenarios, life scenarios, of future incarnates. And everything we do that's coming through in a positive way, that we create virtue with, where we're co-creating with God, changes their equations to some extent, because they have a more, they know that some of the karma they have been trying to deal with will be lessened by the time we get there. They have it figured out. And so they change their scenarios based upon that. They don't need as much, we'll say, support from all the other souls' incarnations if their soul's incarnation, or their incarnation, is doing a bit of a better job. So that just helps all of them. And so they're going through these literally virtual incarnations, and they, because, first of all, it is faster than what we may think in. So they're able to think, and you have these virtual incarnations move faster than normal. But also they have tremendous amounts of time, 700 times more. In one of our days, they've gone through a couple of years of that being's life in one of our days. And in 20 of our days, they've gone through 40 years or more of life. So you can see how this whole thing is just amazing in terms of how quickly they can come up with the, we'll say, better examples and better incarnations of how they should best create their next living being. And they're doing this together. So they all have to work together to give and take so that the system works at the highest level possible. Some souls may choose some things that work better for most of the other souls. Not so great necessarily for their incarnate. But if that's the case, then the incarnate is going to face more karma more quickly and get over it. So it's not such a bad thing. And the other souls might say, well, wait, you're going a little too far. We think we can give up this and it won't hurt as much. It's a continuous improvement. They may replay the same life, which is the next life, oh, who knows, countless times. And as they do, they change each in relationship to the other. And remember, it's a dynamic system because we are making changes here. And when we go on to live in the astral world there and in the mental world, so that it's going to keep filtering and to get a better and better outcome, hopefully. Now, if we become very selfish and if we lose our way, they can't directly sense the things we do terrible, but they sense holes, and those holes become negatives to them in the sense of what they can contribute to all the others, and it diminishes the whole system. So how we're living now is affecting tremendous amounts of time that is being gone through in these higher realms to determine what will be the best incarnate. They can't wait till we get back there. They have to be constantly doing it because it's such a complex system. And the importance here is co-creation with God. The more they know their incarnate will co-create with God, and the better they can use all that together, the higher the levels of co-creation, the less wasted time, and the better the outcomes of future life. Remember, humans affect all the lower levels of life, which is pretty amazing when you consider that. So put together, it's quite a system. And one that is pretty darn remarkable when you give it some thought, that what a soul's life is like is so much more interesting than what our life is like, because they may be living 700 or more days for every day we live. What a life. What an amazing life they're going through. And it's not as great a difference between us when we live in the astral world after our death through here, but still there's a great difference. So you can see how this whole system really pays off and allows us to live much more creative lives than we've ever been able to while we say we'd be physically alive. It's not possible for human beings, while they're physically alive, to even come close to having as much meaning developed in their life as someone who lives in, say, the lower mental world and is gradually becoming their soul in the higher mental world in the process. It's the difference in time provides a totally different experience that we cannot replicate, no matter how virtuous of a life we live here. We just can't do it. We don't have the capability. Our own senses slow us down to the point where we can't exist in that way. Okay, now, let's talk about some of the even more esoteric elements about time and how this whole thing kind of fits together. When we go on to live in the astral world, we have the option, at our own choosing, to correct the defects in our emotional selfishness while we were physically alive. We cannot change the physical deeds we did, because those exist in the physical world as physical karma, and we no longer have physical senses or physical energy and bodies that we can do anything about. We can give some thought to it, though. And this is the interesting part about the process in terms of our use of time. And people do this in the astral world. When they get to the astral world, a lot of people start to actually live astrally or emotionally in ways that are less selfish and more loving. That's a very good thing. They also live a sort of virtual physical life by their own choosing. The astral world, by nature, is sort of like a blank sheet of paper, almost blank slate. But the people that go there choose to recreate in astral form a lot of the physical forms. And this recreation gives them the opportunity, although they don't directly sense physical energy, but they can approximate some of the sense that they used to have, depending upon how long they've lived there for and whether they've been practicing this very much. And so what they can do is they can correct some of the physical things they did, but it won't correct the physical energy anymore. However, it does change their permanent genes, their spiritual genes. It allows the impressions on their spiritual genes to commingle with the physical spiritual genes, to commingle with the astral, or vice versa is a better way of saying it. Some of the astral genes that become enlightened are able to affect some of the physical genes that were not enlightened, and there's something called fusion that takes place, where a replication of the physical gene is made in the astral gene, and that allows, when the person is recreated as a new being, a new person in their next lifetime, to allow some of these enlightened moments, these enlightened periods, when they change how they might respond physically, to become part of their physical gene when they're recreated. And they have some enlightened parts now that they gained while they were astrally living in the astral world. This fusion process, very important. It's the joining together of two kinds, like kinds of energy, but the energy isn't really there anymore, just it's remembrance in astral form. But it's good enough to become an impression so that it can be used by the soul to make a person in physical form again. And although it still is in the astral form, the person is able to use their creative imagination at a very young age, say 5 years old as an example, and take this impression they have of their astral life, where they change how they would live their physical life in the future, and then actually make the changes much earlier in life as a child that would have taken only 20 or 30 years to recreate again. So they start immediately living more virtuously as children. And it's called fusion, a very important part of the process. It gives us a step up, and it's a reason, a very important reason, to live astrally as virtuously as possible, because it will have some effect on your physical life. You can correct some of the defects. Of course, it's up to your next incarnation to choose to do that. Some children will have the opportunities and the inclination to choose to do that. Others may not. It also says why some children by nature are just very virtuous and others aren't. It has to do with this same effect. And time is really being used here, because you have so much more time in the astral world, you can actually compensate for some of the more negative experiences you created while physically alive. That's the wonderful thing, and it's even more true when you get to the mental world. In the mental world, there are helpers, people that exist from both the physical and astral, and some that live in the mental world, that come and help people do exactly the same thing in their mental body. There, they can actually live for protracted periods of time, like days, in prior life experiences while they were etheric physically and astrally alive. And sometimes, and even prior lifetimes, if when you get to the mental plane it's possible, you could go back and fix those as well by helping yourself to fuse the what would be the astral and physical energy, but it's no longer really there, in a kind of mental form. Now, you're not using creative imagination anymore. Now you're using mental thought, which is logic and concepts. And you take those logic and concepts and you create new kinds of mental forms that you can think about. Usually those don't come out until a little later than 5 years old, but it depends how advanced a person is. It could start at that age. It usually starts like in their teens. So, but nonetheless, you get way ahead of the game, because you started to correct some of these issues for your next lifetime while you're in the present one. And all because you have huge amounts of time in which to do it. You see, in the mental world, someone could have hundreds and hundreds of days for every day we have here. Yeah, and that's a great thing about it. And they can spend a relatively short period of time correcting a large amount of serious problems. Now, there is some resistance. Some people don't want to make those changes. That's too bad, because they waste and use up a lot of their sense and a lot of their ability to improve themselves. And that will cost them. It'll cost them in their ability to co-create while they're in the lower mental world with other beings there who are pretending or sort of like they're being souls. And then when they get to be souls, when they rejoin their souls, they won't have as great an experience as they would if they were continually doing this with the folks that are around them that they may not even be able to communicate with, because they haven't cleared out their senses well enough so they can even sense these other people. They're too arrogant or too egotistical. and getting rid of all the arrogance and egotism, and then getting rid of the selfishness and the astral and lower body, the physical body, for their next lifetime, is all possible using the large amounts of time they have at their disposal. Huge amounts of time. I mean, it's amazing how much time they really have. And some people say, well, isn't it true that people who are caught in this experience but don't give up, they continue to be arrogant or egotistical, isn't it true that they suffer from all this time? And the answer is, well, I guess so. It's sort of like the carrot and stick. Yeah, you can have all this time, you can take advantage of it, and it's a wonderful thing. Or you can sit around and be bored to death, repeat the same mistakes thousands, hundreds or thousands of times over in the mental akasha, and not get anywhere. And then, yes, loneliness, boredom, fatigue, loss of sense, all those are going to be the results. But that's something a person chooses to do themselves. Nobody's punishing them. I know that the theories and the thoughts of some religions are that you're being punished. It's not that. It's self-inflicted. It is literally self-inflicted. Nobody has to suffer those consequences unless they choose it. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the truth. Okay, so time becomes your friend or enemy depending upon whether or not you choose to co-create with God, and it's your friend. It's your enemy if you choose not to and be stubborn and egotistical, arrogant, which is even worse. Then you punish yourself in incredibly bad ways. I mean, who can imagine a couple of thousand years, 2,000 years, sitting around going through the same experiences and having the same stupid outcomes because you won't change your mind, won't open your mind to any other possibility. How crazy is that? But there are some people who do that, and of course, that's their choice. Nobody's forcing them to go either direction, other than the universe itself. It makes it extremely grueling for those people who choose to go against God. Now, I want to briefly touch on evil, just so we can understand what evil's trying to do with time. You remember at the beginning of the show, I said time in the astral world, at the lower parts except for evil, is dilated about six times between that and the physical world. People in the astral world would say the time is dilated 1/6, or depending upon how you want to look at it. So you can say it's either 6 times or 1/6, depending upon the relationship of who's looking at what when. But nonetheless, when we examine this process, those are the natural states that occur because of the collection, we'll say, of consciousness that exists within the subdimensions of the astral world. It goes from 6 to 24 times. But something else happens in what is known as the A sphere. The A sphere is really, it is a kind of a sphere. It's not a natural dimension. It's a dimension designed and created by evil. And it's not an accident, and it isn't something that's a byproduct of evil just wanting to be evil. To actually choose to do this, and this is going to sound as strange as you can ever imagine, instead of living in the six times of time dilation, they slow it down to 3. What does that do? Why would you ever want only 3 times as much time to live in as 6? It sounds like a bizarre idea, right? Well, this is what they do it for. And you have to be evil to even get the full meaning of this thing. And that is that by slowing it down, they become nearly invisible to all beings who exist in the astral world. You can't see them, you can't understand them, because it puts them outside of the physics that permits the senses, even of the highest, most developed people in the first subworld, to be able to pierce. So they like their invisibility. They're like little roaches, and some of them are big roaches, but they like to be in the dark and get away from being understood and anyone be able to shine your light on them. And this is, it gets, that's a, one of the things they like about it. Another thing that they like about it is it improves their ability to take power from others, but at the cost of some loss in consciousness. Now, how does that work? Okay. Well, it works something like this. Let's say I'm going to be evil, and you're a person who's somewhat selfish, but not really evil yet. Okay. And I want to grab some of your power. Well, if I live in the A sphere, I'm going slower than you are. And you can't see me. Now, if you could see me, I'd be at a great disadvantage, by the way. But I'm invisible. You can't see or sense me whatsoever. So I could just poke around taking time. And everything that you're doing is being done at your normal, quote-unquote, speed. But in my perspective, I can examine it so that I can look at it in a way that I can maybe find a way of slowing it down. See, what I want to do is take your energy and make it more dense. I want to take your time and make it more slow. And I've got to find some way to do that. And you might say, well, wouldn't it be easier to do it if my time was 12 times faster, or 12 times, so it would be twice as fast? Not really, because I'm not looking to improve your functioning. I'm looking to disturb it, and disturb it in ways so that I can steal power from you. The best way I can do that is by looking at it from my perspective, your actions, and that shows me the best way to slow you down. It's sort of a natural effect of me living at a slower speed. Yes, my consciousness is not going to be as high, but I don't care. I'm not really trying to raise your consciousness or be inclusive with you. The only thing I want to do is take your power. Power is the ability to move through time and space, and the ability to destroy energy or form from one state to another, to move it from one state to another. We call it destruction. And I can do that best if within my reality I can take everything and cut it close to half and then see how that causes you to fail. And then what I need to do is to set up some kind of communication between you and me, and there is such a thing called a group soul of evil, that allows me to communicate with you and convince you to do these things that will slow down your processing, your movements, so that you become more and more selfish, convincing you that you're going to become more powerful when really I'm the one that's going to steal the power from you. But first I've got to get you to do things that are more and more against God. So I'm getting you effectively to work on changing your quantum constant, another way of looking at this, by lowering your own consciousness and making the quantum constant smaller for you, which disables your ability to do all kinds of activities, will eventually destroy your body and senses. And like maybe today you can fly and tomorrow you'll be able to barely walk. And take this power that you have to do these things and expropriate them. I expropriate the power by converting it into an energy that you can no longer sense and you can't use. It's the energy of evil, the energy of the A sphere. And unless you enter my sphere, you can't do anything. It's gone and you won't even know where it went to. I just got it. So I'm using time. As evil uses time in a negative way, it convinces those that are selfish but not yet evil to distort their own thinking so that their ability to use time and space and energy is diminished. Therefore, they have a loss of power, and evil increases its power, and it's all hidden. It has to keep it hidden or it loses it. So keeping it hidden as part of its, we'll say, plan. And it's scary because it's like everything in reverse. It's like everything we think of as God and the natural way of using time and space is put on its head. Now, let me go one step further. Evil in its own realm has a hierarchy, a pecking order. And although outside of its realm, evil can't be seen, those inside the realm of evil can see each other and experience each other. And those that are lower on the totem pole, so to speak, or it's actually a triangle, or that's one way to look at it, those people who are lower are continually having some of their power drawn from them. Some is left with them so they can continue to take from others that are not within the A sphere. But a proportion of their power is constantly moving up so that the evil being who's at the apex is experiencing all the time of all the beings that, of all the power that it took from all the beings lower than itself that's connected with the power. So in a weird way, you could say that those dark masters at the very top of this pyramid actually do experience a large amount of time from all the power and all the sense that is stolen from all those below them who are also taking from all those outside of the A sphere. The dark master seldom takes from directly from those outside of its sphere because it's a waste of its time when it can take it from all those that are in the A sphere. It's more efficient for it to do that. Only rarely does it do something else. So this is the process that evil uses. And it's a very, we'll say, a destructive process to life and to consciousness. And those who are higher up in the hierarchy, the evil hierarchy, are capable of doing incredibly powerful things because they're collecting power from a larger and larger base as they're higher and higher in the hierarchy. And the ones at the very top can live literally for very large numbers of years, both in astral time and even in physical time. But they are still losing consciousness. Some of them believe that they are gaining consciousness, and it's an argument that could be stated that they're gaining evil consciousness. They're learning better and better ways to become more powerful, but they're not necessarily, in the long run, going to overcome God to the point where they will no longer suffer for all that they've done. All they're doing is delaying the eventual and inevitable. Eventually and inevitably, they will relive all the time by a factor of a minimum of 3 and most likely 10 or more of all the time that they stole from all others, and they will relive it under the worst conditions you can imagine. They live in bodies of very low-level consciousness creatures, but they have their full, for them, existing consciousness. So if you can imagine, if you're, let's say, I take you and I put you inside a worm, and now you have still your same consciousness, but you have to live through the life of that worm times a million lifetimes of it just being a worm, and then you move on to some other low creature, etc. That's what evil ones have to go through. So when you talk about the punishment of time, time is most brutal, most punishing, most destructive to the future of evil. Nothing could be imagined any worse, in my opinion, than what evil beings, particularly masters of evil, have to eventually go through. And it's inevitable. They can avoid it for a long time, but they cannot avoid it forever. And eventually, the time they will go through is beyond our comprehension. And they will have no choice because there's no real death for them. They're just constant reincarnation at these low levels with the consciousness of nearly a human. It's a terrible experience. You're imprisoned by the form that you're in and the life of that form. You can't escape it over and over and over, almost endlessly. Eventually, these beings come back through the system, and they eventually recover. But it could be millions and millions of years of torturing, self-torturing, through consciousness that causes incredible levels of suffering. It's just beyond all imagination. Okay, well, we're running out of time, and before we do, I want to sort of give us a synopsis of our brief future of time. The future of time is that the longer we grow and become more a part of God, the more we do so, the more time we exist to have, we have to do anything that is co-creative with God in, and the more our life becomes meaningful. The idea that we're losing time by moving into higher dimensions of time and space is a misnomer, and the opposite is actually true. God made sure there was grace. Just the very fact you die and go into a higher dimension of time and space gives you a tremendous advantage, and you'll live longer and more meaningful time when you do that. Eventually, we are all destined, even the most evil beings today, are all destined to become godlike ourselves, to experience godlike experiences, and to live through a trillion years just in this dimension of time itself, possibly. At least many billions, if not a trillion years. Huge amount of time. And this will give us the experiences in either real form or virtual form of life itself, and a great deal of experience of God. A tremendous future awaits us because of the way time works in our favor. And when people say, well, I don't have enough time, and that's really what my life is so bad about, what they're saying is they've abused time, and they're paying some of the penalties of separating time from space. But they do have enough time. They just don't have the consciousness to use the time that they have in ways that creates intelligent activity and joins time with space, allowing them to gain so much more from their life. But they will eventually have that. So the people that say that, they're saying that because of ignorance and not and a misunderstanding. And finally, I want to make a statement about science in general. In the present day, science does not yet understand time or space very well. And its understanding of energy is confused, but there's a little better understanding of energy than time or space because it isn't able yet to recognize that time and space and energy are all connected as part of God, and that thought is the main spirit, is what we talk about when we talk about thought. Thought is the main ingredient that's missing from their understanding, and consequently, this is the confusing issue. It may be a decade or two or three or whatever, if ever on Earth, I don't know, but I'm hoping, before this is all discovered in the mundane physics of the planet. But when it is, it will be an important event because much more about the future of time will be understood. Okay, we're out of time for right now, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.